Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Lou Bank.
I'm Linda Sullivan from Cena Secreto.
And this is Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Green Gags bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits in rural Mexico.
Amen.
Okay. So I want to talk to you today with you, not to you, with you. It's a conversation.
At me.
At you. I'm going to talk at you about the best mezcals for mixing according to Agave Road Trip.
Ah, I see. We're going to spin it.
We're spinning it. So there was this this article written by my friend Emma Jansen for Punch. And the article was the best mezcals for mixing according to bartenders. And she surveyed bartenders. And it was a really good article. And they talked about all of the concerns about, okay, well, you need to find a mezcal that's affordable for cocktails, right?
Facts. That's one of the top things that you have to think about if you're in charge of a bar program. That magic number is a dollar an ounce.
Oh, look at you, Nancy Drew. Okay, so we'll get back to that. But dollar nuts. And then, of course, there's flavor.
That's
right?
Very important.
Right. But then she also brought up, because the bartenders brought up, the ethics of what you're using. Mm-hmm. And she spent some time talking about, if you can do that in writing, talking about the importance of biodiversity and the importance of not creating a monoculture in the world of mezcal. And then ended with, this is the part that got me, Linda.
I know. I'm curious to see what got you hot under the collar.
Well, not hot under the collar, disappointed. So Emma included five mezcals at the end that she suggested as alternatives for making cocktails. And four of them were Espadines from Oaxaca. And then one was from San Luis Potosí, a Salmiana from Derrumbas.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, you know how I feel about this, Linda.
I know.
So when I look at the Comercam or CRM, I think they're Comercam now, stats, according to the stats, one time out of 10, when somebody orders a mezcal at a bar, one time out of 10, they're getting something that's not Oaxacan Espadine. And I suppose if you extrapolate those five suggestions, it really, I guess 20% of them, which is better than 10%, right? 20% of them were non-Oaxacan Espadines. But all I could think was, and this is not to knock the selections, right? Like, I'm not saying that those are bad. But I am saying, like, I felt it was an opportunity loss, an opportunity to talk about, okay, so what are the actual options for a bartender who wants to make cocktails with mezcals if that bartender wants to reduce the impact on Oaxaca and Espadine?
Right. So I felt like she was in a tricky position because she was interviewing the bartenders and asking for their suggestions, but she was the filter, right? That was then gathering all that info and putting it forward. And then there was to me, it felt like there was a disconnect. And I love Punch, and that's like a go-to. I'm sure a lot of folks that listen to this podcast agree with that. Punch is tends to be a leader in these kinds of conversations. And they were saying, she was saying, Espadín, don't create this monoculture. But then you go down to the suggestions and it was use all of these agave. And I thought, Oh, well, that's like the opposite of what we were just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So and it broke,
so that felt tricky to me. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was pleased, though, to see the derrumbes included.
Yeah.
And you know this, but particularly one of the things that came to my mind when she mentioned monoculture was we're not talking about some of the varietals like Salmiana, which mm-hmm. is the varietal that's included from derrumbes. Yeah. Is they all the agave, right? This is what I think is so, so special. One of many things about this plant and the spirit that we make from it, right? It's a plant that only reproduces typically that one way from the quiote. Once we use it, it's gone, right? Not like grapes, not like grains. They come back every year. But the Salmiana is one of those special varietals that also can reproduce from the Iuelos. And so that was an opportunity to say, hey, why aren't we using more Salmiana in cocktails, in making mezcal? Right. We can take those Iuelos, throw them back into the land, and potentially have way more semi-silvestre or semi-wild agave in the future. That is a huge answer to fighting the monoculture.
You sort of, boy, but you just went sort of sideways from where I wanted to go. And now, but because
oh,
like,
good, because
like,
usually you're the one pulling the punches. That's fair, I gave that's you fair. A surprise.
Well, so my issue is like when you're talking Iuelo, you're talking about homogeneous genetics, right? Well, so it's literally a clone, and right. And I'm not saying, you know, oh, that means we should never do that, but I am saying like maybe mix it in. So you've got some Iuelos mixed in with some Salmiana that you've grown from seed.
100% sure. Yes.
Well, I don't know. It could even be 50%. It doesn't have to be 100%.
100% agree.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's good. Okay. Yeah. I like that. So I thought we should put together our list of what we, because well, it's literally the title is Best Mezcal for Mixing According to Agave Road Trip. You know, I know exactly where I want to, well, obviously the derrumbes from San Luis Potosí, like that's the no-brainer, mm-hmm. but you know where else we have to start?
Where?
Oh, come on, Linda.
What?
Where do you get your paycheck?
One of them.
Not from me.
Lucy Pistolas. That's what you're going to include.
Yeah.
I mean, I cocktail with that almost every day of my life, of course.
Right.
Well, here's the reason. Another thing that...
Do the full disclosure.
That we should touch on. What? My conflict of interest?
Well, it's not a conflict of interest. If you just have to say it. You
right,
get money
I
from
do, I do the education for yeah. La Catrina Imports, which brings Lucy Pistolas and Villa Suso into the United States of America.
Right.
That is my full disclosure. But the other point that came up in this article, which is relevant mm-hmm. regarding Lucy Pistolas, is that one either it was Emma or one of the bartenders she interviewed mentioned that you got to look out for agave or mezcales that are too cheap, because if they're too cheap, you don't want to use them because maybe somebody is getting screwed over or it is. I can't remember all the things exactly they listed. But what came to my mind is, or if it's too cheap, the producer could be the owner,
right.
which is the case with Lucy
right.
Pistolas.
Right.
The reason that you can go to Binny's or any of the
point.
Small bottle shops and get Lucy for $35 a bottle is because the family that produces it owns it.
Yep.
And nobody works for them or does their sales except for me and on contract work. Like, they are so, so tiny, and they sit on that shelf next to bottles that are owned by big companies and celebrities and all kinds of people, so that people don't know that.
Well, and the other thing, too, is I think that the pressure put on Espadín in Oaxaca has pushed the price of Espadín up in the same mm-hmm. way that Blue Weber prices went up in a way that I think causes you to misunderstand the financial situation of a producer in a completely different state. Like, they're in Guanajuato,
yeah.
right? And, you know, they're so far away from that Espadín pressure of Oaxaca that you can't compare, you're comparing apples to napalm.
I didn't even know what the next word was going to be.
I didn't either until it came out of me. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
But you're right. And that's, folks don't understand really how the markets work in those other states either. It's a completely different beast,
yeah.
like you're saying, in Oaxaca than it is in Guanajuato, San Luis, Durango, right?
Yeah.
I'm always reminding people there are 9 states that make mezcal in Mexico we are mostly talking about one of them, Oaxaca, right?
Right.
So there are eight more.
Mostly.
Right?
There's one, an understatement.
9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
That was your comment.
There you go.
Fact,
there
right?
you go.
90% of the time we're talking about Oaxaca.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would definitely, I mean, obviously, I cocktail with Lucy all the time, and I'm not running a bar program, but I know a number of the bartenders that were quoted in this article, at least the two Chicago ones, they use Lucy in their bar programs.
There you go.
So it fits the price point.
So there's number one, or I guess number two, if you include the rumbas, because I will. But then, you know, there's also Burrito Fiestero.
Oh, right? That's a great one from Durango.
Right? Yes. So you've got this beautiful cenizo, beautiful artisanally made cenizo. It clocked in, I checked it over at Binnie's, it clocked in at $40.
Oh, that's not bad. I didn't know the price point off the top of my head.
Yeah. Oh, I did all the, like, I made sure we didn't go over the price points of what she had suggested. Yeah.
Well, and flavor profile wise, this is cool because if you look at a map, Oaxaca is it's as south as you can get in Mexico, right? It has tons of coastline.
Well, you go to Chiapas, but
it's like the butt of Mexico, right? The bottom of, in a good way, we like butts. The bottom of Mexico.
And you can't deny it?
I cannot deny it. The bottom is the coast, like the curve of Mexico is the coast of Oaxaca. Durango is as far north as we make agave spirits in Mexico.
Well,
they make Bacanora in Sonora.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, there's some people in Sonora and Chihuahua that might want to have a conversation with you.
Well, but they're not making mezcal.
Well, they're right. It's not certified
mezcal.
They're making
agave spirits, right? But they're not making mezcal.
Or Bacanora. Yeah.
Sure, exactly. But there, if you just look at the map, it's so easy to see how different your terroir and your climate is. And this flavor comes through in a huge way in Burrito Fiestero.
Yeah.
It's that cenizo tastes so, I mean, people love it. If you watch somebody who is learning about mezcal taste something from Burrito, their eyebrows go up, their eyes open wide like saucers, because it's so different for them than what they're used to by the traditions and the kind of the norms from tasting in Oaxaca. I think that's great to cocktail with. You can surprise people.
Yeah, you know, I think the first time I ever had that, I was with you.
Oh,
I think.
When we were in Nombre de Dios.
Where we got locked down in the middle
good
of COVID.
Gracious, that
and
trip.
They showed up with all the bottles.
Yes.
Oh, that was such a pleasant experience.
Oh, they're so sweet, too. Yeah. They're a good team. They're really kind people.
And the Sotol and the gin. I dig that brand.
Oh, that Sotol I like, too. Are we talking about agave spirits or mezcal? Oh, the title is the best mezcal.
Yeah.
But that Señor Sotol from them,
you
could cocktail with that really well as well.
Yeah. But we'll do
the
different.
We'll change the title.
We'll do the best. So tall for mixing. Anyway, so then next up, I've got my old friends. I haven't talked about them in a while, but my old friends at La Luna. La Luna Cupriata.
Oh,
where was
Michoacán.
That? Michoacán Cupriata.
Actually, that's a great question. Why wasn't that on there?
Because
here's the other bartender trick for hitting that price point. La Luna makes their Cupriata, which is actually an ensemble, right? Yeah, in their black label bottle, there's a little bit of Manso Sahuayo in there.
Oh, that must be a new thing. I haven't honestly had them in a while.
I think there is. I have some in the house. We're in the car studio, but the house is right over there. I'll look. But they make it in a liter bottle.
So it's a liter at $40.
Yes, which is a dream for bartenders because those extra couple ounces bring that price down. If you're running a bar program, that is music to your ears.
Yep. Cool. Okay, so that's another one. And then this one I think I'm going to curveball you on. I'll bet you're not expecting this at all.
I'll keep me on my toes.
Hacienda de Banuelos?
Mezcal? Oh, Banuelos, yes.
Oh, you do know it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so they...
This is Zacatecas, right?
It's Zacatecas, their tequilana.
I love this list.
So
we're exploring all the other states.
How much do you think that is?
This is Maverick. It's probably... I think it's under 30. Is it sub 30?
No, it's 35.
It's 35. Well, from the distributor, I think it's sub 30.
Oh, right.
So
when you're talking about wholesale to
thinking.
A bar,
that's fair.
That's fair. So, yeah, when you're talking about 35, that's literally comparable
to
the Lucy Pistolas.
Yep.
Yeah.
It is. Oh, that's awesome.
Right?
Which varietal is this?
Tequilana.
It's tequilana, So this is a fun one.
Yeah.
See, even for your conversation, you've talked about this with other guests or maybe with Chava on the podcast. for your conversation, for the Gringas bartenders that are talking to people, okay, over the bar, some of what this does, pulling mezcal and agave spirits into cocktails, is gets people talking about and maybe sipping neat in the future, which is, you know, it's not necessary, but it just expands where people are in their knowledge of agave spirits. And working with a mezcal that is using tequilana, that's going to blow people's minds. They say, oh, maybe, you know, I didn't know that I drink tequila, or this is the varietal that we use all over Mexico to make tequila. Oh, really? I didn't know you could make mezcal with it. Cool. New conversation broached, you know?
Yep.
That's there great. That's a good hacienda, too. Right. They also make, I think it's a tepemete. It's more expensive,
A bunch of expressions, but every one of them, I think, is knockout. Mm-hmm. Everyone that I've had, I think I had four expressions at Bowl of Zole in Brooklyn a couple of years ago. And every single one that they had, I thought was just
delicious.
Amazing. Yeah. And so the next one, I guess I lied to you because I said they were all mezcales.
We can throw the sotol in.
Okay, so we can throw the sotol in, so Senor Sotol. But, and so I guess I'll put that on the list for the web page. But I wanted to include something from Sonora, right? So we've got the Bacanora brand Agua Miel, which clocks in at $40.
Ooh, I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, you know, it's a Bacanora that's made to be a cocktail Bacanora. Mm. It's $40 a bottle. So again, at retail. So once again, completely affordable for the well compared to these other selections.
What's the flavor profile like?
Oh, you don't ask me about flavor profiles. You know that.
Your palate.
Yeah.
You're not palate.
But what I will say is that it's made from what they call Pacifica, right? Because to be Bacanora, it has to be, which is Angustifolia. So in a way, it's Espadine, but it's Espadine in the north.
Yep.
No pressure on Oaxaca. We'll create pressure in the north with Bacanoras soon enough, but no pressure on Oaxaca.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I love our list.
Okay. So then the final one on my list. Do you have anything that I haven't brought up?
Not yet. No.
I've got one more.
Bring it.
Okay. But we're going to drink it.
Ooh, yes, please.
Okay, so it's at your feet. Yeah.
With this coffee.
So, you know, they included Del Maguey Vida.
Oh, yeah, they mentioned this. She mentioned this in the article.
But she didn't recommend it. She just recommended the regular Clásico.
You're right.
The Clásico of Del Maguey Vida. When they released back in, I think, March of this year, they released
this
Puebla edition.
Yet.
And I have. And I like it quite a bit. So, you know, I was talking with... yeah, there you go. A little pour in there. I was talking with Ava. Ava, I'm going to butcher your last name. Ava Pelzer? I think it's Pelzer. Who is their education rep? I don't know. She's like brand manager for them.
In Chicago?
No. Everywhere.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Get it, Ava.
So I got a nice quote from her on this about what they're trying to do. So let's run that quote while we're tasting.
Okay.
So if you're looking at the stills, that is probably the most modern piece because they're new. You know, you go to the Palenques, they've been using these copper stills for a long time. There's kind of a rustic quality to give you a huge understatement. But then you go to Ashokoban, or at least, again, I've only seen photos. But the row of stills truly is like, oh, this is that state of the art. This is the next level. And then the bottling facility, which is on site, of course, again, looks much more modern, much more formally regulated. And so that's where we get into kind of the faster pace of production and meeting a certain volume need. We are sort of spotlighting a region where a volume mezcal can be made, can be exported from, and leading the charge in that way. Obviously, Del Maguey and Pernod Ricard are very aware that as the category leader, everything we do has a huge spotlight on it. Like, there is responsibility involved, and you know that's going to be very close to the hearts of the founders, to Steve Olson especially. And so the idea of making a mezcal in higher volume, more intentionally at 40%, you know, there has to be another why besides we have to meet global demand. And so we're not using the term sustainable production yet because there's so much greenwashing in many industries, including ours. And, you know, that facility is not there where we can say this is 100% green operation, but that's the goal. And responsible scaling and responsible production has to be the way forward. There's just simply no other way.
That's awesome how transparent that is.
It's transparent, and it's acknowledging the fact that as Mezcal is growing, as sales are growing, and it's going to keep growing. Like last time we checked in, 2% of tequila, right? But it was 1.5% before that. As it can, so, you know, huge growth year on year. As it continues to grow, it's going to get more difficult to maintain this beautiful handmade process that we love, and even more difficult in places like Oaxaca if we keep just sourcing Espadine from that one state. Yep. So the fact that the Espadine in this case comes from Puebla, that it's processed in Puebla, that it's in a facility that they're not trying to pretend that this is some family that, you know, has been doing it forever. This is literally meant to fulfill a demand in a way that doesn't create more abuse of Oaxaca. And I love that.
Right. And they're being so honest, I mean, about the greenwashing, which is, I would so much rather them say, here's what we're going for. We're being realistic and we're telling the truth, but we want our arrow to point in this direction. Right.
Right.
I completely appreciate that. And this is nice. I get a lot of like corn husky flavors. Are you tasting that?
Yeah, well, I'm tasting something like sweet and fruity. Uh-huh. I wouldn't have called it corn husk until you did, but you know how my palate goes.
I know, but or like a sweet corn, like harvesty flavor.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. No, I like this quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, and you know, and so the price point of this one, I think, is even lower than Vita Classico, I think. Yeah, I'm showing it at $33 at Binny's.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, but you know, so do you have any other bottles you want to talk about? And if not, I'm going to take us down
a different path. You can veer us.
Okay, so at the beginning, you had talked about dollar an ounce, right? Mm-hmm. And that was also, you know, echoed in the article. And when I have conversations with bartenders, I hear that a lot. But, you know, I've got this quote that I've been wanting to use for far too long from a friend of ours who passed away. And, you know, and I'm not like it's his name is Michael, and the people who know him know. And I don't want to trade on his name, but I do want to use the quote both because I want his voice on my podcast and because I think it's really relevant to the conversation. So take it away, Michael.
The industry is looking usually for less than 20, and there are plenty of bar owners who are no way. I want everyone to see liquor costs above 18, and some will put that number at 15. It depends on the kind of establishment and what they're about. And you can do price lining, if you will. So my liquor cost of goods needs to be, let's say, a 20. Let's say on that guy. And a lot of quality places want to go for 20. A naive place is going to price everything in the joint the same way so they can get that
fermenting
in 20%. I can walk in and look at a spirit list and go, you morons, what are you doing? Because that means if you have like, you know, a Lalo Cuiche, you're going to charge like $25 an ounce for it. Because I sat and did the math on my calculator. Well, it doesn't work that way, right? You're going to sell 300,000 vodka sodas this month, you know, and hopefully 200,000 tequila sodas this month, whatever. And you're going to sell 7 Lalos.
Right.
So you don't need to make that beautiful markup. You can live at 35, 40, 45%. Mm-hmm. Or to me, a smart bar owner does. When you price everything the exact same way, so you're not going to sell high-end mezcal if you price all of your everything to be 20%. There was this Italian place I loved in New York that had this amazing grappa list. And I used to go there and I would fume because I'd look at the menu and go, seriously? They were just insanely expensive. And everything was priced for the fucking margin that they wanted.
Yeah.
But these were $80 bottles of grappa. So it was a $35 pour. I'm just not going to do it. So the bottle sits on your shelf for 5 years. Like, you tell me if it's smart to, like...
right.
Wow, you're getting great margins on something that doesn't actually sell. So right. Your fictional margins are exceptional. Or you can build a loyal client base, teach them about grappa, which nobody
fermenting
wants anyway, and you can start to move stuff. So my philosophy is, you're more expensive. You have to look at like how many Lalos are you going to sell a month? 12? If you get 35% margin on that bottle, it is not going to touch your bottom line.
Right, you're going
to sell 10,000 fucking Victorias and 10,000 Pacificos. If you don't have those priced right, you're done.
That was a good tribute. He's so right. And that's why he was a smart barman, because if you appreciate it and you want to move it, you want to educate people, you want to talk about it, it's just like when a grocery store has a sale and puts their ad out with their 5 or 6 loss leaders on the front page.
Right.
Right. They get you in the door and you buy your whatever produce was there and your one, you know, beef that was on sale. And then you also buy the cereal and the this and that. That was right. That's
well,
their goal.
Sort of. I think it's almost the opposite. And it, so bear with me, right? Usually the loss leader is, okay, I'm going to actually price milk less than I pay for it. Mm-hmm. And by doing milk, eggs, and like these general staples to get somebody into the store, and then they're walking down the aisle and they see the cereal they need to get, and they buy that at the huge margin. Right? So it's almost the opposite, where people are coming in for their vodka sodas, right? It's almost like you want to cultivate a consumer base of drinkers, a guest list of drinkers who want things that are beautiful and unique and expensive. And if you try to do that without stepping people up from something that's an inexpensive cocktail to suddenly, here's a $35 neat pour, no one's going there. Mm. But if you step somebody up from that mezcal cocktail where they're paying, how much is a cocktail now? Like 20 bucks?
Mm.
Okay. So a mezcal cocktail for 20 bucks, and I've been having this mezcal cocktail, I'm like, hey, I kind of want to try it neat. Oh, that's interesting. Do you have something else like that? It's like you can step them up, but if you go from a $20 neat pour or a $15 neat pour to a $50 neat pour, 30, like that's just too big a step.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. And the other way to accept it is to know that you're going to sell 2,000 vodka sodas. Mm-hmm. Let that pay for your expensive bottles. Like, let that almost like their little sale buddies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, you know, I'd also say, what I don't see a lot of, like, you'll hear people ordering their margarita with Patron, right? They'll step up with the Patron. And I don't see people promoting that with mezcal. And I get why, right? Like there's this nervousness about taking, and Lalo would tell you not to do it, but taking Lalo's cliche, as Michael points to, right? And using that in a cocktail to enhance the cocktail. Now, it's not the same, because there's going to be a different flavor profile in Lalo's cliche versus any one of these mezcales that we just suggested as well mezcals, right? So it's not like you can just do a one-for-one swap out. But I think that if you want to cultivate that market of people buying better agave spirits, I think there's something to be said for offering one, maybe two specialty cocktails that cost $40 and have something special. You know, we're living in a world where people will pay how much for bottle service?
Oh, gosh. Thousands of dollars.
That's literally thousands?
Yes.
Literally?
Yes.
Okay, so if they're willing to pay that for bottle service, I gotta believe that somebody somewhere is willing to buy a $50 cocktail.
Oh, without question. I mean, people, when I used to work at Topolobampo, people would buy regularly Don Julio 1942 margaritas.
Okay, perfect.
And that it was almost a $50 cocktail.
But did you ever see that at Topolo? With mezcal cocktails?
From time to time, and or if I suggested it.
Right.
I would offer chichicapa, del maguey chichicapa cocktails.
I want to see that on a menu, a specialty menu, where it's literally written down so that somebody knows that is an option for me. I want to impress my date. I want to feel like the king of the world. I want to try something different. I've been playing around with this Oaxacan old fashioned. I'd kind of like to taste an expensive Durango old fashioned with the Ultramundo Lamperillo. Like, right? Like, I want to see that in order to ensure that we don't continue putting all the pressure on this inexpensive, quote unquote, monoculture, Espadine, Oaxacan bottle.
Okay, I like that idea. I can't think of any bar examples in Chicago at the moment. However, I will say you've probably come across Ivy Mix's book,
Spirits of
Latin America.
Yeah.
She has a number of great examples, and I'm sure, well, we could look it up. We could Google it because she runs Leyenda in New York. I wouldn't be surprised if she has a cocktail like that on her menu, because in her book, she does a number of like little split base tricks where she will like float a quarter ounce, or she'll split base with a half ounce of something really expensive and maybe an ounce of something that's more cocktail affordable. And of course, these are recipes that some of them are make at home, but some of them are inspired by cocktails, or maybe they even are cocktails that at some point were on her menus. So she's a person that is thinking that way, and she's using those more expensive bottles in the cocktail because particularly that flavor profile is landing that cocktail right where she wants it.
Oh, stick the landing.
Yeah. And she's like a flavor maven, so she's doing it on purpose to put that cocktail exactly where she wants it.
I love that. Okay, I'll have to check out that book. I'm actually going to be in Brooklyn next month, so
let's just drive the car studio right now. Let's keep recording. That's an agave road trip.
There you go. Okay, well, I think that that wraps it for this. I think that's a lovely conclusion that we should all just go read Ivy's book.
Let's go.
Okay. Thanks, Linda. Hasta pronto.
See you next time.
You've been listening to Agave Road Trip, the critically acclaimed award-winning podcast that helps Gringex bartenders better understand agave, agave spirits, and rural Mexico. We're blessed with sound engineering by Roy Sierra and a theme song performed by Gabriel Oliveira and Marco Ricos. Sign up to become a road tripper and listen to more episodes at agaveroadtrip.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know. And if you hated it, well, I'm sure you'll let us know that too. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Agave Road Trip. Agave Road Trip is a production of 10 Angry Pit Bulls, Inc. Agave Road Trip is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. To subscribe to the Heritage Radio newsletter, enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with Heritage Radio Network on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find Heritage Radio Network at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization using the power of educational storytelling about food to build a more equitable, resilient food system. Heritage Radio Network couldn't do that without support from listeners like you. Become a part of the world's most innovative community today. Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the Heritage Radio Network family by becoming a member. To become a member of the Heritage Radio Network, click on the beating heart of our homepage. Heritage Radio Network can become addictive. Programming you hear on Heritage Radio Network might lead you to eat, drink, and listen to more programming on Heritage Radio Network. If you drink, please do not drink and drive. Drink responsibly. Drive responsibly. Eat responsibly, too. And listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly. To listen to Heritage Radio Network responsibly, wear protective earbuds. While wearing protective earbuds, do not drive. Do not walk either. Sit in a comfortable chair. If that comfortable chair has a hard seat, please remember to stretch every 30 minutes. If you stretch every 30 minutes, please stay within your defined stressing capacity. And consult a doctor who specializes in stretching. If you don't have a doctor, maybe Dr. Ryan Acock, the Cocktail MD, can help you out. Thanks for listening. Agave Road Trip out.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.